Story time! Time to start the day!
All right, it's Friday. It's time for API storytelling. And today I just got one friend, Aiden, in here. So let me just bring him in and get it going.
What's up? Hey, Ken. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. I was super excited about the audio on the intro because, like, it's so energetic and it was always too low to hear before. So it pumps me up now to jump in. So,
yeah, I was looking at getting the API storytelling tattoo, but they said it was too complicated. So I'm gonna have to sit on that for a little while.
I'm actually going to do another round of work on our imagery because I hate the logo. And as much as I love Julia's little diagram, I think we can find something newer and interesting. So we'll see if I get some energy this weekend or upcoming. So what's top of mind for you this week? What have you been doing?
I think similar stuff to you. We stepped back and we've been sort of rereading all of our old interviews. From sort of all the customer interviews we've ever done with Optic and thinking about some of the design first workflows we want to enable. So I was all week basically away from my computer, either in calls talking to people or designing some workflows and just thinking through like these age old problems with fresh eyes, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I love it when I can find one in these grooves that I have a very OCD kind of mindset is how I get most of my work done. I find a rut to get into. I get a little bug in my head and I plow forward with things and I tune out the rest of the world. And this has been my secret to success for most of my career. It's also the secret to my last divorce and other things, you know, in my life, because I just put on these blinders. But when you're a manager and when you're doing, you know this, when you're a boss, you got other things, like you can't always get into that mindset. You got to be dealing with a lot of different things and working. And so when I get there again, I really like it because it's a really comfortable place for me to be. And the API lifecycle this week was one of those places. And it was one of those where I was like, once I caught the bug on like Tuesday, like I had to see it through to get to a certain point in my head where I could actually, feel like, okay, I can see the constellation of the API lifecycle and like what it means, and as my last post articulated, the dimensions of it. Because for me, like, what this has been ongoing, I mean, it's been ongoing for a decade, but what is the API lifecycle? And that was kind of the catalyst this week, was revisiting an older post I did in March where I asked 13 separate people who are all doing APIs professionally and know APIs well, what is their API lifecycle? And it's fascinating how people respond and how people see what the API lifecycle is. Even myself, like, I still am constantly amazed at how I see it and don't see it. And so it's fascinating. It's a fascinating thing to think about and talk about.
So when you went back and reread your post from March, what was like one or two things that stood out to you, like the strongest or were most surprising?
I mean, one was the lack of mentioning of version control and change management. There was one that said versioning there out of the 13, you know, really that people see the tangibles or tangible elements like documentation. That's a stop along the API lifecycle. And so the fact that I would put change management and semantic versioning as the number one, you know, and I didn't actually in mine either. So I have to, you know, I had my own definition along. And so that is surprising. And I would say that's kind of one of the underlying pushes behind my work is this week was people complaining in an open API spec. It's got version 101. And that's an island. Like,
yeah,
there's no, well, I want to look at last version. I want to, you know, what's coming up next. Hey, take me to the current. Is this the current? Like that fun. And so that missing from those 13 interviews, I think is, that's the life in the life cycle, you know, to a certain degree. I don't know, you know, it's so, yeah, that was surprising.
Yeah. It's interesting because I've had a lot of similar ways people talk about the problems they have with the current workflows, which is like motivated that video about what specs can maybe be that I did a couple weeks ago. And also a lot of what we do at Optic. And I think, you know, people look at the documentation and they say like, this is broken. It's not correct anymore. But the reason it's not correct, or that particular problem that they're attributing to that part of the life cycle, is actually because the change management part didn't work well. And you can, I think, blend that out to environments and reports and knowing what's in what environment, and notifications and all these other things people talk about wanting. I think change is like that moment when those things can either start working better or start working worse. And we see the actual stage as a part that's not maybe working for us, but it's all about the changes around it. And I think we're kind of zoomed in almost too much sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, we can't, so we're like talking about a process, but we can't see the process. Mm-hmm. And, but we think some of us think we're seeing it. Some of us aren't seeing at all and don't think about it. Some of us, I think, would like to see it and know it's there, but like, and that's the part that I struggled with, is I'm supposedly an expert on the API lifecycle and I can't see it, you know, like I consistently can't see it and consistently talk inconsistently about it and what it is and what's next and what you should be doing. And so like, that was kind of unnerving for me. Like, it's just, I can only live with that for so long, where I'm like, oh man, I gotta nail this down. And I would say the three dimensions that I kind of started or laid the foundation for my last post this morning or last night, or I can't remember, but was, so the first part is the versioning. So what's the next, the current, what's the semantic versioning of this? The second was the environment, like what environments are available to me? Is there a mock, a production, a development, a staging? And then there was maturity. Is this just in design? Is this an active API? Because like that one right there trips me up the most and causes a lot of discomfort in conversations. Like someone comes to me and goes, what's the API lifecycle? What should I be doing? And I go, well, you should be designed first. You should have an open API spec. You should be mocking it and documenting it. And in reality, I should ask them, like, you know, is this an existing API? Are you even iterating upon it and doing anything new with it? Or is the plan to just, well, it's an existing API. We need it to be on some sort of lifecycle. Let's document it. Let's set up some tests and let's monitor, you know, what's going on. And design's not even in the equation. So why would I start blurting out things about API first and design in that kind of conversation? And so that's just one example though.
Yeah. I mean, people come in with so many different use cases and like sometimes, like one of the really interesting ones that keeps coming up for us when we're adding governance features, which Stephen Meisel's been working on with us for a while, is the fact that people don't actually want the governance features to tell them if their entire API follows the guidelines, but if their current changes and future changes do. And it's like this forwards only governance thing, which, you know, it doesn't fit into the current life cycle. But as soon as you're like, well, why do you not want to check your other API? And they're just like, well, it's because if we turn on the linter in the code base, we get all these warnings. And if it's code, we change them. But if it's an API, changing our API to be compliant with our new rules will break all these people. So like it's one of these use cases for governance. And most people are in that situation where they already have an API that they're trying to govern, but none of the governance tools really acknowledge that. And it's really interesting because I mean, that's like one of the easiest insights for an API center of excellence team that we talk to tell us is like governance, but forwards only. And none of the tools support it. And it's like just so interesting how when we leave change out, we miss something like that, which is such an obvious story. As soon as you say it, it's like, oh, of course, that's what we want. But the tools don't do it very well. So it's always like, how is maturity and legacy not a part of the spec? As you pointed out in your post, like, these are the things that matter most.
Yeah. Alan Helton from Tyler Technologies, who I had on Breaking Changes at 9 a.m. on Wednesday.
I got it wrong four times in a row. Chirality.
He talked about how he saw some of my talks on having a governance collection, how to use Postman to pull your open API and apply some governance to it. And he's like, so I set up, you know, took all your rules, set up a whole bunch, and then put it into the CI/CD pipeline. And he's like, that's the sure quickest way to piss off your entire team and make them not want to do API governance. It's like everything failed. Oh, and there's like 1,200 individual little failures across, like, that you got to fix, as well as your regular daily job.
Yeah. And fixing it is probably going to break your colleagues, which will cause more internal strife. And now you've created work. Like this like tiny, his work was 10 seconds to add that to the action, but it could spawn out, if everyone fixed all those problems across the whole org, it could be like thousands of man hours.
Yeah. And so, you know, I mean, I would love to see this in Optic governance is like, okay, forward only, but then also like some sort of acknowledgement of where the team is at. So you have, and I'm really thinking in dimensions because of this, mm-hmm. this post, like, so, and perspectives is, so you have forward only, and you have your legacy back. So we're navigating the semantic change, and then we're applying this rule set of rules to whatever that is. But the team's awareness of those rules and mm-hmm. of the good or design practices that went with them, their literacy and their education around that. So how do you educate in a forward motion across teams to make sure they have the knowledge they need?
Yeah, I think it comes at a few different things. And it's funny because this was actually something that my old open source project was trying to do for teams. It was going to help them basically keep all their code up to the same standard. So it was like a linter times five. And I talked to a bunch of people when I was working on that. And what I heard was that all these people who would write down the architecture requirements would feel like they were writing all of this really good content, these really good resources for people, but no one would ever read them and no one would ever follow the rules. And the same kind of thing I think is true with API design guidance. There's great resources out there that people write about, but it's not obvious like how to apply that to what I'm doing as a developer. So I think when you pair these rules with something like what ESLint does, where it can help you actually like automatically fix the problem, or at least like link you to related resources about how you might fix the problem if it's not something you can automatically do, it just needs to show up. And developers respond to things in their workflow if it's put into their workflow the right way. And like if their build is failing until they make it work and it's easy to make it work, they'll follow the guidance. We have a ton of API excellence teams that are like, we want this forwards only governance, give us Optic to do it. It's like, well, until your developers, you have to go sell us into these teams, because until the developers are following the behavior pattern we set up for them, it's just going to be this thing in the background. Like you need it to be right in front of them. And a lot of teams today are asking for API specs like twice a year to do governance on. And then it becomes a to-do list they send back. And it's just not integrated into the developer working. So I think until you have that feedback cycle, you know, you're not going to get to work. I think what Alan was doing was right, but if it was forwards only, then it would be helpful because it's productive. It's saying, here, this current batch of work you just did, this will help you do it better and not have this class of vulnerability or security issue down the road that you have to fix because we're setting you up for success before you merge the code in. So I think it's forwards only and right in the workflow are like the two big components, and then linkable to the knowledge so you can understand why. And not just you fix the problem, but you fix the problem and here's the problem that's going to prevent that you may not have thought of, but here's why 6 months from now, you're going to be really happy you didn't put an array at the root and you kept it as an object with a key.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, so important. And for this forward motion and catering to how developers see the world. And so the I had a point and I lost it. Hate it when that happened.
Well, maybe this will bump you back into it, but I thought versioning and maturity were really important dimensions, and they actually changed the context of how you would want other parts of the workflows to be set up. So like, you, for something that is not very mature and is still experimental, like, it's okay if it's breaking changes to that, but you also don't want it in your public documentation, because then a user might rely on it. So there's all these different like dimensions that I thought were really interesting. And once you can talk about that in your spec, the tools would change. But right now I feel like a lot of teams are sort of getting there indirectly, which is interesting.
Yeah. And I don't think a lot of folks have, and I don't think we've done this much. I think occasionally I've popped open where I've shared a screen, but I'm going to share my screen here. And hopefully that doesn't look as bent on the screen as it does on mine. But anyways, the four critical dimensions that I want. So this is this is meant to be an extension extending the OpenAPI. So right above this in the info block of OpenAPI specification is semantic version. So it's like version 1.01. And then all this is meant to do is extend that by adding just those basic capabilities that I talked about to say, hey, here's the next one. And this should be a ref to the next one, the previous one, and the current one to get you navigating. And then here's what I talked about environments, development, staging, or production. And then here's what I talked about with maturity. And of course, this maturity could be different depending on the org. But then visibility. Public, you know, is this public, internal, group, or partner? Because like you said, so these are the most critical contexts I feel people need to have to be have an informed API lifecycle conversation, because this visibility, that's huge. Like, oh, it's just a group microservice. No one gives a shit about it being, you know, too mature, you know, but having clear steps, you know, or layers of maturity defined, visibility, and then having a handle on the forward only, I think is the most critical kind of groundwork to lay.
Mm-hmm. I was curious when I was reading this this morning, did you imagine this being at sort of the root level of the OpenAPI spec, or were you imagining like individual fields or endpoints could have different maturities?
Yeah, no, I my actual belief in this should not be in the OpenAPI spec, but I'm, you know, constantly adjusting what I do and how I see things to the audience to onboard them, because I've been spending the last 8 years peddling a version of this same thing in an API's JSON format. And, you know, this was the purpose of APIs JSON. See if I can actually type it. This is the purpose of APIs JSON, was to define this as a spec and provide this, which some people use. I mean, there's adoption, but no one uses it to this scale, and not very many people want another spec, me included. Yeah. And so the primary reason I'm doing this as an open API spec is to narrow the scope, because I want to shield it, insulate it from asynchronous event-driven lifecycle API things. Mm-hmm. And I want to narrow
that's a
it
whole, because... I just said that's a whole other thing, because an event-driven API, you'd evolve differently than a REST API too. So that's a whole other context we even get into.
Yeah, so I was trying to, again, another dimension, I'm just trying to rein things in, because... even the super smart people I have this conversation with, it quickly flies off the rails every time. And I want to ground it in this case, an open API extension, because being able to just anchor it to an actual machine readable definition is, I think, helpful. I still don't know. And I kind of talk about that at the bottom, like what is this used for? And I'm not entirely sure, you know, but I want tools to be able to guide people, to educate people, to demonstrate, help us manage, automate, and govern is what I'm envisioning. And, you know, at the very least, you know, I started with this is Where do I have this? I have to go to a. What'd you drop?
I dropped my keyboard. Oh man, I dented this thing. I didn't know it could dent.
Nice work. I have to go to a postman workspace for this one, but oh, there it was. So, like, where I'm actually working on this is right here in a workspace. And it's public, so anyone can find it if you want to find it. But I think I linked to it in the story. But here's the, so I have a just kind of shell of an open API definition, and here's where I'm doing the work. So here's what I talked about is this is just an extension, and you know, here's the open API version. Let's put it down here closer. So I want to extend this, you know, I've got the semantic versioning here. And so I extend it with lifecycle and I get my version and I've got my environments here and I've got, you know, this is the detail for it, but see, I'm in the context of Postman now, and this is what I want this lifecycles scaffolding, this machine readable definition to guide my journey now. I want it to guide what I can do with this API. And so I'm right here and I go, well, what? I'm not valid for some reason. Hold on. What did I do?
Was it when you moved the version?
Yeah, probably.
YAML and spacing?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe not.
No, it didn't do it.
There's a yellow error on the bottom right. Near the scroll bar. Is that
I can't see it on the screen. Okay, so it's invalid YAML. Yeah, I couldn't see it because my thing was not why is it invalid YAML? Anyways,
it looks if we scroll down to that yellow dot, it would tell us.
I don't see a yellow dot. Whoa, right there. No?
Yeah.
It should just navigate me there. Where do you see a yellow dot?
It was a little higher. it's going to be hard if...
Yeah, I don't see it. I know it's there, but I'm not seeing it for some reason on my screen.
What did you want to do with the generate button? Yeah, so
I can hit generate, and it gives me the ability to generate mocks, generate and do different things with this. And I want the language on that button to be contextual to these states, you know. So these, you know, whether it's active or whether it's design. I want, you know, this is just going to be internal. So I want the context of my buttons and actions around this open API to trigger off of that. What's available to me to do based upon the context that I've set in the base of these dimensions. That's where I'm at right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I asked about the field level stuff because I wanted to build for a long time, I never had time to, someone should just take this idea and do it, but build a new kind of mocking that would understand the life cycle. So you could say, I want to generate this mock for this endpoint. And there's this field that I just added and my forward it to my real API, have the response come back. And then if that field isn't from my real API, add that, or like sort of like take my current traffic and turn it into my sort of current traffic plus the changes I'm planning to make. So mock sort of to extend my current responses. And that way you don't have to like encode all the weird logic into your mock to make it work the way you expect. You just get to get these other layers on top of it. And sort of like, so show me my API response, add layer, which is how it'll look in a week or how it'll look in this version and transform it. And there's, so all these kinds of things that I think would be really useful for people working on these tools, that context about history and evolution and sort of not just what's behind you, but what's coming next, like that changelog spec, but with the future as well. That to me is super exciting about this idea, is you can start to layer in future into past, into current, and the tools sort of adapt to what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. And that I would say reflects a lot of what I saw in people's definition of the API lifecycle was it was fix, iterate, change, you know, and make those incremental changes. But, you know, we're going to have to reduce the friction that's involved with each incremental change to be able to just add a property to an existing API, have it designed first. It adds that property to the open API. It adds it to the mock. And then you can populate it with a bunch of data, set up your tests, and make sure it does everything that you expect. And then just go, well, now I want that in the production. I want 1.1 in production with the data and everything that I, you know, and the tests, and making that API ops, you know, kind of flow frictionless. Or so I don't have to worry about noise outside. So I don't have to worry about, I can just worry about the property that I want to add and the data that supports that. I don't have to worry about all the other baggage of that release, you know, to go with that forward motion.
Yeah. Almost like I feel like Mike has talked about this in the past, where he wants like gateways to be smart enough to help with these kinds of things, or at least him and I have had private conversations about that. Like, it'd be really cool if you could, if that field could just be built and then it's just there, but the gateway doesn't show it until you've published it in Open API too, or something else. Like,
yeah.
APIs are not the code. They're like this thing outside of it. And I feel like all of the problems in the API lifecycle is because it's this runtime artifact that kind of is loosely defined. And then the code is this concrete thing that makes it happen. And we're always just like chasing our tails forward or backwards or up or down. And it's like, that's the root of why this is all complicated.
Yeah. And that's why I got, you know, in the post yesterday that got me to today was very much trying to figure out those and bridge those, because that's the purpose of this diagram was, here's my capabilities that I have in Postman, and how do I then do that forward motion? That's what I was trying to get to. And right now it's doable, but there's, you know, there's a lot of that how to draw an owl, you know, kind of meme where it's like, well, you just do it, you know, you just do it and it's done. Is, you know, this open API, this is an actual one that I use to demo quite often, and it's for my restaurants. So here I have an open API and I can edit it. And when I make changes to this, if I did what I said and added a property, I don't have a properties tag property on. Okay. So say I added another property here. Let's see if this is actually still active. I haven't run demos in a while. Whoops. Yeah, I need to change the name. This is my new property. It'll actually validate. So it's in the path. Now let's make it query. So it'll validate. There we go. Now we validate. But that's why I can't see that those what you were seeing, because I got my damn Zoom shit in the way. Excuse me.
Oh, okay.
So Zoom's like right in blocking all the messages, and I can't. And as soon as I scroll up, I lose it. So, anyways, if I hit save, this in here, if I go out, and this is UX, you know what I'm trying to. No, I don't want to go to private API network. Come on, Ken. Come on. If I go to integrations, and this should be in the workspace, I shouldn't have to go out of the workspace to do this. And I go to AWS. This restaurant is synced. Okay, so my schema is invalid. So it just tried to sync it, and I didn't. My open API wasn't valid to get there. So it would take that property and publish it to the AWS API gateway, and but then also it does this. It syncs to this
43 seconds ago. Cool.
GitHub, which then triggers these actions to do a contract test. It auto generates the lambdas behind it, adds that property to the lambda, runs a performance and a security collection test on this, but it failed. So these didn't actually go through. And so that's where I'm trying to get here from this open API. Well, I'm at the restaurant one now, not this one, is I can change that. I can edit that. Get back to the restaurant open API. When I have that open API open,
mm-hmm.
I can make changes to that open API. And when I'm sitting here, and if I had that API lifecycle context in here, which I don't, so it would sit right here.
Yeah.
That's where I'm trying to get is so this is synced to the gateway. This is synced to GitHub repo, which triggers an action, which runs this performance test, this security test, and the set of contract tests right here that I also have as a mock. And so I want to be able to steer that further steer that context and lifecycle from right here in the open API contract. And so mm-hmm. any changes that I make, it knows I'm making it on a draft or design version, which then in the gateway, it doesn't go to the production stage. It goes to the design stage, which is a different set. And then I don't have the GitHub. I should be able to then update, you know, only the dev lambdas, not the production lambdas, you know? And so I need that lifecycle separation to be able to get there, but I don't have that context right here to do that. Does that make sense?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I've done so many interviews with people over the last couple of months about this kind of problem too. And yeah, like if you have, like we made a change in there and it didn't validate. So that version could only have been the design version because it never made it to production. So I feel like there's like another level of checks too, which might even be more logical for people, which is like, I can't even publish this thing until I'm able to show that what I would be putting in production is valid against my spec and that the implementation matches. And like, that's the thing you're sort of trying to look at before it goes to production. So I feel like, you know, the specs are good tools, but they make it really hard to figure out like what is where. And one other problem is like, is this thing designed, like if that was generating your docs on your collection, is that what is designed or is that what is deployed? And like, it's so obvious that that's the thing that we need. I just don't know exactly how to make all the tools and specs suddenly support it.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating to think about. And it's definitely like, I mean, how I prescribe to people, like, do this ahead of time, do API design first, fix these problems, have this knowledge, and go forth and build good APIs that aren't going to break, and because you have this amazing process. And then I've got all these customers who are, you know, the same as your customers. I'm just trying to stay afloat in my daily job, and I'm getting all of these requests, you know, hitting us, and we're trying to move this forward. But oh, and I just started this job, and the guy who ran the API for the last 5 years is gone, and I'm now doing this, and so I'm responsible for all this legacy. But then I've got all these new app, you know, parameters and headers and things and endpoints I got to put in, and so it's like I can't, you know. So it's like I can't stop that to do design first in that. But we're gonna try moving forward with just this small set or this other set of APIs. And then Optics coming in going, okay, well, we'll just gather everything that's going on, you know, at the proxy or at the gateway or whatever. We'll stitch together. Here's your current snapshot, right? Is that correct? Is that the current snapshot of version you're looking at right now? And try to help you stabilize this. But like, we're all on this like circus train barreling forward, and we're not in full control of what's behind us when we're still responsible for, and we don't have full control over what's happening moving forward. And it's just about equipping people the best we can to make sense of that. And that's what the life cycle, I think, kind of putting it on guardrails. And that's all I see this open API extension being, is it just guardrails. I really don't believe in it as an open API spec. And like you said, I want it to do async. But I don't think it should actually live in the specs. I think it should just be a reference, you know, because it's also got to be part. I got to figure out how do you fit it in? You know, how does the governance piece fit in? You know, how does that strategy piece that guides us? So this extension exists for 1,000 separate microservices and APIs. There's an instance of it, but you need that overall strategy and governance version of it to create those guardrails. Otherwise, you're still going to be pissing people off. So,
yeah. Do you want to hear the strategy that we came up with over the last couple of weeks of trying to synthesize this?
Of course.
All right. So there's three things that are important to it. And we're going to be blogging a lot about this, me and Steven, over the next couple of weeks and showing you guys demos. There's your specification, which we all understand. But also in this world, the specification has its full history. So not just for the whole specification, you have versions for every independent endpoint.
Yeah, just like individual file for each individual endpoint?
Think of it more like if you're in GitHub and you click on a particular file and you look at history and it shows you all the different commits that have affected that file. It's more like that, and you can play it back to any previous version. So that's baked into the Optic spec. We also have this new notion, which is how we're going to be accommodating design first, called proposals. And proposals are exactly what they sound like. It's sort of like a suggestion in the corner of Google Drive. And if you click approve, then there's a new version of that endpoint or those endpoints that have been updated. And if you reject it, or if you ask someone to change it more, you can iterate and sort of have that place to have the conversation. And that's where governance rules and collaboration and other things can happen. It's not quite in the spec yet, but you could generate, you know, a mock server, an open API file of your current specification, plus all the proposals that are works in progress, or plus all the proposals that have been approved. And then the third pillar of this is evidence. This is where testing and real traffic comes in. Because we have every single version, you can look at where all these different versions of each endpoint run. So if a developer wants to work code first, they just make the change, Optic sees it, and then they've created a new proposal with evidence from their local environment and test that show that they've made the change. And when that goes out to staging or production, we can say this version of the endpoint is in staging or production just from watching it. And if you work design first, it's basically the same thing. You propose changes and then it waits for evidence. It waits until someone builds the thing. So it's proposal, evidence, and then it tracks where those things are being used. And I think this idea of there's certain things like maturity that you need to sort of have the user say, like, this is in design, this is prototype, this is this quality, which would affect maybe the governance rules applied to it. But then when it comes to environments, I think that's something that should always be sort of implicit. It should discover what is in what environment based on looking at real traffic in real places. That's how we've been thinking about the problem.
Yeah, no, I like it. It makes a lot of sense. And I think the evidence is an interesting aspect I hadn't considered. And so I would like, how can you inject evidence as a business user, an end user in that, not the developer, the API developer? Can evidence be extended out that far, or am I taking it too far? Like, I need their zip code. Their address is in there, but there's no zip code. I need a zip code. How does that become evidence, that need?
Yeah, so I think that fits into something else that Mike and I talk about a lot, which is that design shouldn't happen in open API. That's like one of the steps towards the end of design, but so much happens in conversation, in tickets being opened. So I would imagine that in this new editor that we're building for proposals, you can give it examples and you can say, here's what the spec should be. But the first step of it before it's ready for that is probably just to say, here's what I have, here's what I need. And a business user in our documentation could click on, you know, that response and say, hey, this isn't quite what I want, or ask for a revision, or ask for changes. And then, you know, if you are the person who asked for that zip code field, then we might automatically subscribe you to get notified when it's been built, or when we, you know, respond yes or no to that thing that we're doing. And it, that like happens in GitHub issues today for public APIs, but it's really like, there's not like a good place to like encode that entire conversation. And something that I think would be really valuable too.
Yeah. I mean, evidence, you know, I would say there's a lot of like usage of that, you know, in the GitHub issues, like you, someone says, hey, I want this. And then people vote that up. And so that evidence becomes stronger, you know, and then that's how people make decisions in their roadmap. And that's how, you know, but I think, you know, using the word evidence to bring it home to the API storytelling is, I think, important, because like, it's got to be provable. It's got to be like, there's got to be some weight behind it, either from business perspective or, oh, it's already in use, you know, type thing, mm-hmm. or here's how it works, here's how it functions. There's got to be some weight behind that evidence. And I think, and trust and truth, you know, so yeah, that's an interesting one. I like that.
Yeah, the idea is basically just to make certain things automatic that can be, and just to keep the context relevant. So, you know, you can see this proposal or this idea or suggestion or requirement went from just a use case to a design to being approved. And then here's the PR where it was built. Here's the first day it appeared in staging, and here's that build ID. And here's the first day it appeared in production. Here's that build ID. And maybe whenever it moves from staging to production, since that's a change, you know, we regenerate the Open API spec and we send it to 42 Crunch. And I think when you build that API around these statuses changing, then you can start to bring all these other vendors along for the journey, whether they're governance or design or security. Like, that's the thing that the vendors who would build those sorts of tools care about. But there's not a good way for them to like get that data today and make it really.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I could see lots of cross domain notifications and alerting and awareness to be had. So from domain driven design, you know, within an org, all the way up to standards, you know, like the fire healthcare standard, and hey, we need this property. We've added it and augmented and extended these systems with it, but it's not part of the core fire specification. It's only on these two vendor systems. And that gets, you know, this brings us back home to, you know, your video from a couple weeks ago on Spectacle, you know, is, you know, I see evidence playing out in that, you know, you got to just be able to ask questions of the system, but that context and dependencies and feedback loops, you know, like if you want to add something, add a property and you name it something, it should tell you like, no, you just named that wrong. And here's that property, and it's a standard property across systems. And you should be told, no, you can't name it that. It's called this. And, you know, but maybe you're trying to do something different with that property and it's not the usual context of it, but you just happen to use the same name. And you're like, no, I need it to be called, you know, it's different. So let's call it this. And then as soon as you add that new property, like five people get notified on the standards for whatever that object or whatever that, you know, is. And they're like, oh, now we've got to consider this property. And then there's a feedback loop around at that level. And so I could definitely see like, and different vendors could come and ask different questions. And once, you know, a customer's asked for something, four or five vendors had said, yeah, let's add that. They've added it to theirs, but it's not in the core spec. Then the spec guy people, you know, can just be like, yes, all right, we've got 30 customers across, you know, four different vendors, and the vendors support it. Like, this property is mean something. And let's answer this, you know, this question. It's not an edge question anymore. It becomes a core, you know, answer to a question. So yeah, I can see, you know, I mean, this is when I always mention the, you know, that Open API is just, you know, to get us to the future. And I see, you know, your vision of spectacle being, you know, what we do in that future and how we're able to ask questions and answer questions and satisfy questions with it across this, you know, it shouldn't be so hard. We just have this spectrum of paths that exist across different domains, and we can ask questions and answer questions and add and remove things and do things and then generate tools and services from that. Like, we shouldn't be bogged down at the spec level right now, but how do we get there? You know, that's the thing I keep coming back. How do we get to that point where we can, you know, see things at that level, I guess. I lost my thread a little bit there.
I mean, I think it's, you hit a few things. One of them was like, we helped you and Mike Rousen, it was like years ago, find some of the properties from all the open APIs on API Guru. And we were trying to figure out like the usage of different keywords because there was some decision that was being made. I forget the context of it. And we didn't know if people were even using that keyword we were going to change. And I think that's a thing that happens in the specs, but also, like you said, also in domains and in our individual companies and in these like open specifications like FHIR. Like, we don't, the people who implement these things are doing things very differently sometimes than the people who are designing the standard or building the tooling. And I think when we don't have like a good way of communicating, of course the tools don't align with what we're doing. So, you know, specs work. People use them, they're widespread, they're useful. I think the reason why they're useful is because this is such an important problem to solve. So we kind of make them work, but like nobody's spec that anyone's ever imported into Optic has ever actually been what their API does. And like even people who generate it from their code or say it's perfect because they do design first, it's never been the same, like ever.
Is that the fault of the spec?
No, I don't think so. I think the spec is just a projection. It's a way to write the thing down, just like the language that we use. Like we write it down on the menu, but knowing what should be on the menu because the chef ran out of, you know, garlic and now we have to change the menu, or there's, you know, the Olympics are coming to town, so we want to have a global cuisine on our menu. Like, whatever the requirement is that changed was in the kitchen, we need to update the menu. And if we don't update it correctly, then we miss things. So that's what we sort of talked about at the beginning of the episode. Like, change is the thing that matters. It's always been the thing that matters. It's the reason the life cycle exists. And when we see things that are wrong in parts of the life cycle, it's probably because the change part still doesn't quite work the way it's supposed to. And that has rippled everywhere. So the specs, like, people know their specs aren't right even. Like, we were like, did you know this is wrong? And they're like, yeah, we knew. We didn't know in what ways it was wrong, but nobody is surprised by it because there's not a process around it. But these things are again, they're not about APIs. They're about relationships. They're how I do my thing for you and how you get value that I built over here and how we share that. So I think when you think of it as a relationship, then like those things like evidence and sharing use cases are first class concerns. And that's the thing that we should be building the specs around, is how do we share our use cases with each other? And how do we make sure that when we evolve our stuff, it's compatible with the job we're really doing, which is helping some other team do a thing they're trying to do.
Well, and prevent downstream problems in the user interface and other things. So here's a great example or great use case from a Breaking Changes episode that I'm recording. And if I've already talked about this in API storytelling, I apologize, but I talk so much on this damn microphone. I may have already said it, but so I did a segment with 1X and one current PayPal architects, and they have an RFC in with right now for what's called the item potency key header field, and so this is for a proposing a header, a new header, that its purpose is to tell when an endpoint, you know, to set whether it's item potent or not, whether you can submit and expect the same behavior, or you'll get different behavior every time you submit this. So this is a header for a specific path to say to flag that. Okay, now, what does that mean in business terms? So this gets to the storytelling and how we talk about things aspect. So that's header, an item potency header, which is an RFC in a standard, like we know that because we work in the industry. Mm-hmm. But you know what the business use case and business value is? I don't want my credit card to be charged twice.
20 times. Okay? However many times they mentioned about
20
it.
20 times, whatever. Okay. That's what, you know, and item potency, people are like immediately go, what the hell are you talking about? What's item potency? You know, like all these, you know, and so that echoes back up to the front. People don't like their credit card to be charged twice. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so this is a problem that's been in the space that providers have been solving in various different ways. People use different headers to do this, all, you know, doing the same similar capability. They use existing headers. They create custom headers. All this is standardizing and saying, here's the one you use for item potency. And it can be used outside of the banking industry to not charge, you know, not do something twice. Now, why I came across these two gentlemen doing it is because people were bitching and complaining and saying, oh, we've been doing that for years and we call it the same header and you're just stealing our header. And when I had this and so it showed up on, this is Hacker News, showed up on Hacker News and came up on my radar. And I'm like, and the gentleman that I interviewed mentioned that and they're like, well, all we did at PayPal is we wanted to solve it in the most common way. So we searched across how people were doing it. And then you mentioned when Mike Robson and I asked you to look for ask questions across many, they said this was the most common way that we saw people solving the item potency thing in the financial sector. And so bringing this back to being able to, you know, ask questions in a spectacle kind of way is, how are people dealing with item potency in the payment space? Be able to ask this question. Just ask it out there and it will tell you. And then go, well, how are people doing it who are under European Union regulation? How do they do it? Versus how do people do it in the United States? And so like this is why, you know, I'm really excited about the spectacle questions, you know, be able to ask questions and ask questions from the context of why is my credit card getting charged twice? Or, hey, what header field should we use to determine item potency? You know, it's like this is the technical and the business type of question. Yeah. And it'll translate. I want Spectacle to translate for me. Okay. I want it to translate in business ease. And then what are the legal implications? I want to be able to ask that in a terms of service vantage point too.
Yeah.
And so that's the difficulty of it I'd like to get at.
Yeah. So that's, first of all, a really interesting story. And it reminds me of something you told me the other day. Dev Doshi, my co-founder at Optic, very, you know, Dev, super smart, very, very cogent on most things. And he mentioned a similar kind of thing, like figuring out what to do when there's an important decision to be made, like how to build this credit card or like how to handle refunds. And he had this observation, which is that a lot of the time, you know, we trek all the way through the woods or whatever, but we don't mark the trail as we go. So the next person also has to do it. And then the person after that has to do it. And the person after that has to do it. And then only like years later do we create the trail. What if, in addition to you being able to ask questions, it also was sort of like double blind recording how people were doing things? So it already knew on day one, like, oh, someone figured out item potency is this header. And then it's not something that they both sort of co-invent over 5 years. It's like the next person that goes to build a credit card endpoint, it's like, here's the last five people who did that. Here's the most popular trend was this. People chose it because of this reason. And you should do this too. So from the beginning, we're also, as one person figures this out, we're always marking the trail behind us. So the knowledge doesn't have to be found by people like you, like years later, and then shared out as the standard. Like, why aren't all these individual tiny geniuses able to automatically have their moment of insight shared back into the bigger community? And that's what I hope sort of this brain is like. The wiki is filling itself out as we go.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's huge. I mean, that gets at so much of this, and it got me thinking for a little bit there, and I'll work on some stories around this. You know, calling it the API lifecycle is very much a provider, API provider producer mindset. Oh, I have this API. how does it evolve and then live? And this is one thing I haven't fleshed out in that life cycle definition I have, is the view of the life cycle from the producer versus the consumer. But I would say even just that's the, you know, the producer view is just and calling it the API life cycle, because it's this API that I can see and understand and the life of it. Mm. Now, that doesn't speak to the end user's credit card being charged twice. You know, that's okay. I got an API here. And so you saying, you know, we're on a trail, you know, and so bringing it back home to, I use the word journey a lot, API journey. We're all on an API journey. And what's your team's journey? What's your organization's journey? What's that individual API's journey? And who's out ahead, figuring out the trail and charting that course? And then how are they trickling things back to the people and marking the trees and marking the path and going, hey, look, we spent 3 years and we went down this path and it's like, it's a dead end. Like, don't go down there. Or if you do, here's what you should know, you know, here you go. Mm-hmm. But cause someone else might be able to find a way over the hill or whatever. But so I think life cycle I just feel constraint that it's blinding me that there's a better view of this in a journey, trail, travel, that's going to allow us to better share out and better communicate, still do our work, but then market and go, here's my work, I'm moving on. But then everyone else, as soon as I go to add anything that resembles that into my design, you know, it's mm-hmm. like what's the GitHub AI thing they launched?
Oh, Copilot. Yeah.
Yeah. Copilot, you know, taps you on the shoulder and goes, Hey, Joey just did that over there. Check out Joey's little balloon pops up. Oh, you know, okay, cool. Joey's is cool, but that's not going to work for me. You know, mm-hmm. I need it to do, you know, this and this and that. So yeah, no, it's some interesting thoughts there, I think, to workshop.
Yeah, read about how ants leave trails behind them using their like 27 different pheromones. It's really, there's some really interesting like nature metaphors for this too. But as I've said, I think maybe every episode, APIs aren't about the technology or the producers or even the consumers. It's about the relationship between the two. And I think if we write this down and we think about it as sort of the API relationship, or how teams are doing things for each other with technology, which is a much less sexy name for it. But we need to figure out what that word is. And then if you map it as not design as the first thing, but use case or business requirement, and then you can show how all these things around, like the output of design shouldn't be open API, it should be open API and justification for why this is allowing us to meet the business requirement. And then also maybe that little bit of evidence or trail marking or pheromone that says, hey, if you're going to walk down this road, here's what we figured out. Maybe you won't run into it too.
Yeah. So we're at the hour.
We could talk for three more, but we'll do it another time.
I think we both have jobs too, that we got to go do. I'm definitely going to be thinking about the API lifecycle a lot more. Now that I got a scaffolding to work within, I'm going to run some APIs through it. I'm going to spend some time and think more about the evidence-based aspect of this. I'm going to think more about the journey and the path kind of aspect of this. I think that's a critical one. Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, we covered a lot of ground. This is all what was in my mind all week, so I'm glad we got to, you know, do like our little joint therapy session to to work it out.
Yeah, no, keep up the good work. I enjoy this. This is fun. I, you know, as I said before, I mean, few people you get to like chew on this at this level with, you know, and so it's good. I'm thankful. Ooh.
We have a very special guest next week who we should be able to chew on it more with if we'd like to.
Oh yeah. He knows the stuff when it comes to this. So yeah, no, I think he's going to have lots of opinions on this, as far as where we can go down this road. And I would say how we discover, know about the path and learn about paths and share about paths. He's going to have a lot of insights. So, yeah. Do we want to name who it's going to be, or do we want to keep it suspenseful.
I was expecting you to, but yeah, the person goes by a single letter. That maybe that's the clue we'll leave, and then we'll surprise everyone next week.
Is it closer to the end or the beginning of the alphabet?
It's asymptotally closer to the end than the beginning.
Okay. We'll leave it there. So yeah, I'm pretty excited about that because I've had very, you know, similar conversations that I think kicked off our relationship. I've sat in various venues around the world, bars and conferences and whatnot, and had really intense, great conversations with this person. So I'm stoked. Yeah.
Yeah. If you made it to the end, tune in next week.
Yeah, tune in next week. That's why you got to pay attention. We got to add a little bit of cliffhanger to these shows to get people tuning in and staying till the end and coming to the next one. So with that said, always good to talk, my friend. Good to see you.
I'll catch you later, Ken. Hopefully these aren't too many thoughts bouncing around your head to disconnect for the weekend.
No, it'll be good. I'm getting better at doing the weekends and hiking, and it's good to have these nuggets to chew on when I'm hiking and walking. So
awesome. Hammock driven development.
Amen. I like it. Alrighty. Enjoy your weekend, Aiden. We'll catch you next week.
I'll see you again. Bye.
Cheers. Wow. Yeah. Gotta love that stuff. That scope of stuff keeps me happy. Keeps me, this is why I do what I do. So appreciate Aiden. Hope Mike's having a good rest and relaxation and not getting online. And yeah, we'll see y'all next week. We got an exciting guest. Until then.